Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. Mark Twain famously remarked that history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And it's not the circumstances or the actors of any particular conflict that get reconstellated, but rather the spirit of the problem itself, the unresolved parts of it. As the European continent is once again stricken with bitter divisions and kinetic warfare, does history offer any ideas for moving forward? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Lubos Blaha, a left-wing Slovak politician and deputy speaker of the Slovakian parliament. Mr. Blaha, it's a great honor, great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your invitation.
Now, Mr. Blaha, Slovakia is a relatively small country, but it's also been a pretty powerful voice against the mainstream EU consensus that is, for now at least, in favor of intensifying the war with Russia. And you've been quite a strong octave within that voice. Why did you take the stance that you took on the conflict in Ukraine? And do you think your position has any impact whatsoever in the face of the EU's pro-war unity?
First of all, Slovakia is a very peaceful nation. And we really respect the sacrifice of Russia and Russian nation in liberating us in the Second World War from fascism. So we are very thankful and grateful to Russia. And this is something which we have in our hearts. I mean, Slovak nation. Of course, you can see that Slovak nation is half divided. There is a half of population which is very much influenced by the liberal propaganda, American propaganda, and all these, you know, media and NGOs. And then you have this second part of the population. Fortunately, now we have the majority and we won the elections. I mean, the Prime Minister, Robert Fico. And we want to peace. We want to have a peace. We don't want to send the weapons to the Ukraine. We don't want to have the expansion of NATO because we see this as a cause of this war in Ukraine. So this is our stance. It's very sovereign foreign policy. And of course, we are quite criticized by our Western partners, but we believe in the freedom of speech and the sovereignty of nations. So I hope that we can still continue in our peaceful policies.
Now, I very much like the way you framed this war in one of your articles. You wrote that it's wrong that two Slavic nations are at war and that American arms companies are making money from it. And it's hard to disagree with that. It's definitely wrong, but it's also the reality, and to some extent it's a paradoxical reality, because on the one hand, 4 or 5 years ago, I wouldn't be able to imagine something like this happening. And yet if we go further back down into history, it almost seems kind of possible. It doesn't seem so unlikely after all. And I wonder, how do you see this conflict? Do you see it as an inexplicable, or do you think quite the contrary, that it was to some extent predictable, that it could have happened?
I'm sure that this is not the conflict between the Ukrainian nation and the Russian nation. It's the conflict, especially between American and Russia. America and Russia, it's a collective West against the Russian Federation. Everybody can see this, because if it would be conflict between Ukraine and Russia, Ukraine would be lost in a few weeks. We don't want these conflicts which can escalate to the nuclear war. I think only the people without any common sense can continue to escalate this conflict. That's why we are criticizing our American and the European partners, not because we are anti-American, not because we are anti-European. We are for peace. We want to have good dialogue and good relations on the east, on the north, on the south, on the west, all the earth. So I don't think that our positions are against European Union. We are just the voice of the common sense in the European Union, together with Hungary, for example. But also you have the neutral country like Austria, which is not sending the weapons as we are not. So I don't think that this is something unpredictable. And I hope that the people in Ukraine, either Russians, either Ukrainians, will not going to die forever. I hope that the peace or the armistice can be here in few months.
In order to establish conditions for lasting peace, we also need to understand the dynamics, all the deepest dynamics of this war, not just the current geopolitical layer, but, you know, what is underneath it. And as you have already alluded, there is a memory of the Second World War. Slovakia itself suffered greatly from fascism. You had your own Holocaust at that time, your own very strong anti-Nazi resistance movement. And I wonder how much is that a factor in not just public politics today, but in how ordinary people feel and relate both to the current politics and to Russia and the West.
Yes, we see in the West that there is a wave of racist Russophobia, which is very similar to the 30s and 40s in the European history. And it was the time of fascism and Nazism. And that's why we are very shocked with these trends. You cannot blame the Russian nation as it is with all the evils in the world. This is something which is absolutely fascist. And that's why we remember how it was in the Second World War. And we even remember what Banderistas from Ukraine were doing in Eastern Slovakia. They were killing the people. There were the rubber, the villages in Slovakia. Probably everybody in the world can remember a Volyn massacre and so on. And when we see that Bandera or Sushevich are celebrated in Ukraine, we cannot be in silence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Can I actually ask you about that? Because the West often accuses Russia of exploiting the memory and the trauma of World War II for its own authoritarian aims, while at the same time being absolutely oblivious to the effects of it. I mean, you say that the Slovakian people remember the horrors of the war, but for some reason, the West doesn't remember. And it's very insensitive, to say the least, about forming alliances with far-right and neo-fascist forces in Ukraine and elsewhere. How do you explain it? Is it ignorance? Is it the lack of historical memory? Or perhaps a marriage of convenience or even a conscious ideological alliance?
It's a hypocrisy. It's a hypocrisy, and it's typical for Western thinking in this period. For example, in my country, in Slovakia, when you say that the fascist establishment during the Second World War, because we had this fascist occupation by Germany, you say that this is something good. You will be persecuted by the police, of course, because you are supporting fascism. But when you are defending Banderistas in Ukraine, or you are ignoring their bad deeds in Ukraine, you are a hero of the media and of the liberals because you are defending Ukraine. And this is hypocrisy. But I can say you from history that when we remember on which side was the Western European countries in the Second World War, you can see that Germany was Nazi Germany. Italy was fascist Italy. Belgium, Holland, and the Netherlands was conquered in a few days. Had France in a few weeks. Swedes, they sent the weapons to Nazi Germany and so on. So you can continue in this way, and you see that the sacrifice of Red Army, the sacrifice of Russian nation, of Belarus nation, even the Ukraine nation was so high, it was millions, tens of millions of people, and in Western countries, it was not like this. So that's why it's a different memory for Second World War. We can respect this, and we Slovaks, as an anti-fascist nation, we really remember this.
Now, when we say fascism, you know, this word provokes a lot of emotional reaction. It has a lot of political connotations. But what's underneath it is actually, you know, a belief system that presupposes that certain people are above other people. What's allowed to you is not allowed to me. You are allowed to suffer, and I'm allowed to teach you how to sort of not to be a barbarian. And this is not just a historical movement. I mean, it's more polished these days, but the West still, you know, claims that right to be, the shining beacon of wisdom for other nations. What could be done in practical terms with this kind of ideology? Because sure, it's not always expresses itself as fascism, but it's still very much prevalent on the global stage. And many of the wars we've, you know, the world has seen over the past couple of decades ultimately could be, you know, brought down to that very principle that we as a nation know what's best for you, and we are going to invade and kill and, you know, use all other means to make sure that our will prevails over yours.
Well, there is a kind of superiority complex in the West, and this liberal or neoliberal ideology reflects this. Liberalism is a kind of totalitarian ideology or total ideology because it doesn't respect the diversity of the world. It doesn't respect the other cultures, doesn't respect other nations. The typical liberal in the West will tell you, okay, you have, for example, Orthodox culture, you have the Muslim culture, you have the Confucian culture, but you cannot have this because you need to be a believer in human rights, to the freedom as we understand it in the West. You need to have the same democracy as we had, and so on. So it's a kind of mental colonialism, and this is something we need to refuse because we need to respect all the cultures, all the nations in the world. I cannot say to Chinese that you need to have the homosexual marriages because in Brussels we want to have the homosexual marriages. This is kind of ridiculous. And that's why I really believe in the freedom. I really, really believe in diversity and respect to the other nations. I don't need to be a fan of Russia. I don't need to be a fan of China or fan of Saudi Arabia, but I respect their culture. And this is something which many people in the West stop to respect. And this is a big failure of the Western civilization. But I think the roots for this are hidden in the history of the West.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back to Slovakia and its current position, it's a landlocked country bordered by Poland to the north, Ukraine to the east, Hungary to the south, and Austria to the west. You also have the Czech Republic on the northwest. If the hostilities, for whatever reason, spill beyond the Ukrainian war theater into Europe, you may find yourself right in the midst of it. Do you think your current membership in NATO will protect you? Because, I mean, you express a very, you know, sympathetic, a very coherent, a very rational stance. But if worse comes to worse, will it secure, you know, a good position for yourself?
Well, our national interest is to avoid the war of any kind. This is for sure. That's why we are saying that we need to stop the war on Ukraine, that we need to have the dialogue with Russia and the good relations with Russian Federation. Of course, we are the part of the European Union and the NATO, but we are very critical to the wars of NATO, for example, in Yugoslavia or in Libya. That's why we are very critical. And we see also the causes of the war in Ukraine in this expansion of NATO. This is for sure because the signals from Russia was very clear. We don't want to have the Ukraine in the NATO, and NATO wanted to expand. And it was not Russia coming to the borders of the United States. It was the United States and their allies. We were coming to the borders to the Russia. So this is for sure. You are true that there are different opinions in, for example, Poland or in Czech Republic, because there is a very right-wing Czech government now. But still, the brotherhood of Slovak and the Czech nations, I mean, the normal people, is still there. We have very good connections with Hungary. We are in many, many positions similar to Austria, which is a neutral country. So I don't think that, with exception of Poland, but the Poland and Russia, with their history, I think that is a different story. But the countries like Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Austria, then Slovenia, then Croatia, Serbia are very peaceful nations, mm-hmm, in the sense. So I hope that the connections will be very good.
Okay,
for
well, for the time being, Mr. Blacha, we have to take a very short break, but we will be back to this discussion in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Wars are a result of lies. If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
The importance of WikiLeaks can never be overstated. That transparency is an extraordinary journalistic achievement.
They just succeeded in finding documents that existed and making them available to the world public. I mean, what could be more honorable than that?
By publishing information and sharing information with the public, he was exercising the right to free speech. He did so in the public interest.
I've watched a tsunami of lies and smear engulf him endlessly, vindictively, perfidiously, and I know why they smear him.
Isn't it ironic that no one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice? But the great truth teller sits behind bars, waiting 175 years of virtual death sentence. Are we going to let that stand?
Worlds Apart with Luboš Blaha, a left-wing Slovak politician and deputy speaker of the Slovakian parliament. Mr. Blaha, before the break, you said that Slovakia, as well as Hungary, as well as Austria, are peaceful nations. And I think that's true, but you're still part of two large blocs that are quite inimical to my country at this point of time. And this is a major security dilemma for Russia at the moment, because Moscow certainly doesn't want to expand this conflict to Europe. But European countries keep fueling, prolonging, funding it by supplying their weapons to Ukraine. And I know that Slovakia, for example, doesn't do that. But you're, you know, the countries that you're associated with are doing that. France, Germany, some others, and they're doing that without any consequences to themselves, believing that they can defeat Russia from a safe distance without any harm to them. And any military commander would tell you that this assumption needs to be shattered in order to bring all the war dynamics and all the participants into the open. Do you think leaders in Europe understand how dangerous is the game that they're choosing to play for now? And how do you feel about it, that you may be in the thick of it, of all the kinetic fighting through no fault of your own and through no desire of your own?
Well, yes, you are true that the leaders in the European Union today are very militant, and this kind of militarism should be refused. But also we can see the new wave of new thinking. Of course, it's not in every country and not in every government, but you see the fatigue from Ukraine, I would say it like this, in the European Union. And for example, in Germany, you have the party AfD, which is now very successful in the polls. You have the party of Mrs. Le Pen in France, which is very successful, or Mr. Mélenchon on the left, who is very critical to these imperialist stances of Western leaders. And there will be the European elections in June in the European Union to the European Parliament. And maybe the parties or the politicians who are very critical to this expansion of NATO, to this war in Ukraine, and to this militarization of European policies, I think that these parties can be very successful, and this can change the positions of European leaders. And I hope that this will be the truth.
Now, you mentioned some shifts in European public opinion, but there's also been a major shift in the Ukrainian strategy. Ukraine is now openly approving of and sometimes resorting to terrorist tactics. And for now, these tactics are aimed primarily at Russia and Russian citizens. But we know from history that fundamentalist terrorists almost always turn against their own pain masters. We know that happened with Al-Qaeda and the Americans. That happened to some extent with the Chechens in Europe. Do you think it's possible with the Ukrainians? Do you think they can at one point become a security threat, not just for Russia, but for the European Union too?
Well, terrorism is our common enemy, and this is something which we need to really stress. The terrorist attack on Moscow, which was a terrible act, and we, of course, refuse it. And we need each other, the common alliance with Russians, with Chinese, with everybody in the world against terrorism. And when I see that sometimes, you know, when the Ukrainians, for example, bombed the Crimean Bridge, it was a terrorist attack. And in the West, it was like the Western leaders were applauding, like, this is okay. This is not okay. And I hope that as it is with neo-Nazism and fascism in Ukraine army, as it is in with terrorism in kind of any corner of the world, we need to be very principled and sometimes I see a lot of hypocrisy in the West. That's why I'm very critical to it. But the truth is that we need to fight terrorism in every corner of the world. And maybe when you are talking about this double standards of the European thinking, we need to speak about the Gaza massacres by Israel now. And when we see that the European leaders are very, very hesitating to condemn the Israel attacks, the massacres, even some people in the United Nations are calling these massacres genocide. And suddenly we see the European or American leaders like saying, oh, it's a right of Israel to kill the children in the Gaza. And then they say it's not the right of Russia to defend their interest as regards the expansion of NATO in Ukraine. This is, again, double standard, hypocrisy, and we need to refuse it.
You mentioned the terrorist attack on concert goers outside Moscow, which claimed at this point of time 144 lives, with another 551 people injured. And some here in Russia speculated that this attack was aimed not so much at ordinary people or social stability in Russia, but at President Putin personally, who days prior to that had secured another presidential term and who believes strongly in national security. This is one of the reasons he authorized the military operation in Ukraine. But clearly, he, like no other leader, can guarantee security 100%. What do you think about it? Do you think the hatred for Putin is strong enough to justify in some enlightened circles harming many innocent people to deliver a blow to him personally?
Well, we need to wait for investigation. I don't want to make any statements which are not,
I'm not asking you about this concrete attack, but I'm asking whether do you think the hatred for Putin may lead some people to, you know, approve of decisions they otherwise would not approve of?
Yes, there is a kind of fanaticism on every side, and this is very dangerous. That's why we are calling for peace, because every war can create this kind of hatred and fanaticism where there are no limits. But still, I want to stress the other problem, because when we are talking about this terrorism in Moscow or outside of Moscow, you see the problem of, I would say, Islamic terrorism, which is very concrete also in the European Union. And we have the big problem with migration in Slovakia as well. We want to stop this Muslim migration because it's very dangerous if some fanatics from some Muslim countries are coming to our countries and doing the bad things. And that's why we are trying to say to the European leaders, let's take more money and give to this protection of border before this migration. But they are giving the Ukrainians dozens of millions of euros, but not on this protection of border, not on this fight against this illegal migration. This is a big mistake. It can be very suicidal for European Union. That's why I think that we need to concentrate on the issues of migration, on the issues of protection of our people, on the issues of social rights of our people and the living standards. But our European leaders are doing the opposite. They are doing the even they want to only help the Ukrainians. They want to only help the military companies and this military complex. And this is a very, 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 very big mistake.
Now, Mr. Blacha, you just mentioned a couple of issues that usually make up the so-called patriotic agenda. You know, minding living standards, being preoccupied with domestic issues, wanting to preserve some semblance of social stability, addressing migration conscientiously and consciously, you know, studying its effects on the, you know, indigenous societies and making sure that you actually care about social harmony, that you do it in a smart and diligent way. And, you know, leaders who pursue this kind of politics are very easily, and who, by the way, also care about national security, these kind of leaders are very easily labeled as ideologues, as demagogues, as totalitarians. And Putin is one example, but obviously the prime minister of your own country, Robert Fico, also gets a fair share of those accusations, just as his Hungarian counterpart, Viktor Orban. And I wonder, who do you think benefits from propagating this association between authentic patriotism that doesn't want to take other countries' resources, but just wants to defend its own interests. Who gets benefited from, presenting it in such a not just, dark, but ultimately very harmful and very dangerous way?
Well, I would say that it's a very funny distinction, which is very popular in the West today, as you are saying. On one side, you have these neoliberal globalizers who believe in the Western hegemony. And on the other side, you have everybody else. If you have patriotic, for example, sentiments, if you have left-wing or anti-neoliberal feelings and ideas, you are extremist. You are totalitarian, as you said. You are even désolé, they are using this term in Slovakia. And you are a untermensch. You are untermensch. You don't have any rights. You don't have your truths. You just need to follow this neoliberal globalizing agenda. This is very dangerous. That's totalitarian. It's, of course, different totalitarian narrative as it was before, but we are using the term liberal fascism because, of course, liberalism and fascism, they are different ideologies. But nowadays, liberals or neoliberals are playing like fascists. They don't respect other opinions. They want to persecute or criminalize people for their opinions. This was something in Slovakia very usual 3 years ago, or these 3 years where we had the right-wing neoliberal government. Even me, as a person, as a politician, was persecuted by the police, their police, because I respect the symbol of a Red Army. It's a red star with this sickle and hammer. And I was persecuted like extremist. I was even persecuted as extremist because I wrote the book about Che Guevara, or I wrote the scientific book about the Lenin. And they said, oh, this is extremist. You just need to hate Che Guevara. You just need to hate Lenin. You just need to hate the Russians, everybody, because there is only one truth. Do you remember the period of times in history when there was only one truth allowed? It was fascist era when Adolf Hitler said that this is only one truth. And I think that in a Europe, which is based on diversity, freedom of speech and beautiful Renaissance and beautiful Enlightenment periods, suddenly we are in such devastating period, dark times, even dark times, when we are just prohibiting the other opinions. This is something which every free person need to be very, very disappointed with.
Well, Mr. Blacha, we have to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Let's leave the beast. Thanks.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.